Saludos a todos y todas. Greetings to everyone. I am Dr. Norlan Hernandez, a proud Nica Nicoya, which are terms used to describe someone with Nicaraguan roots. I'm a proud father of Aelami Hernandez and very proud husband of Isabel Hernandez. I'm the director of the Jesse Miranda Center for Hispanic Leadership at Vanguard University. And I'm also the founder and president of Faithful Teachings, a nonprofit organization that aims to be a catalyst through partnerships with local faith-based organizations for holistic initiatives for the transformation of Latin American society. I'm an academic, I'm a professional, I am a leader that lives in the hyphen. This is Cultural Christ.
Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, J.W. Buck. In this podcast, we explore the intersection between the Christian faith and cultural identity. We hold interviews with followers of Jesus to discuss the way our faith impacts our culture and how our cultural identity impacts faith. Now to this week's episode. Welcome, everyone. I am excited to be here with a friend, Norlan Hernandez, PhD, Dr. Vanguard University, all the things. Hey, full disclosure, we're friends. We were in the same PhD program, had the same chair, the legendary Dr. Sanchez, and we defended. And did we graduate the same semester too? I can't remember.
No, I think you graduated one semester before me, if I'm not mistaken.
Honestly, man, the last year and a half of the program was a complete blur. I don't know about you, but hey, thanks so much for being on. Tell us a little bit about yourself as we get going.
Yeah, well, I always start with sharing about my family because I can't start sharing about myself unless I share about my roots, my family, my background. Both of my parents are from Nicaragua. And so I am a proud Nicaragüense Americano. And it's a huge part of who I am because I lived out there. I spent years there and it really shaped and formed how I view the world and how I experience and navigate the world. So that's my parents. I'm the third of four boys. My mom, don't feel bad about my mom because she reigned with an iron fist. Let me tell you, we were scared of her and rightly so. I have been happily married for 9 years and we have been together for about 15. We have a beautiful, she's going to be 7 years old in December. So wow. We have a beautiful six-year-old daughter. Her name is Aelami Hernandez. That's on a personal note. Professionally, I work at Vanguard University. I'm the director of the Jesse Miranda Center for Hispanic Leadership. I also have a nonprofit that's called Faithful Teachings, and we operate in Latin America, currently in Nicaragua, Costa Rica, in hopes that the Lord will give us the space and resources to expand to Guatemala, Honduras, Panama, Chile, and all the pastors that we've been in discussion with. Academically, my PhD is in intercultural studies, just like yours. And my dissertation was on contextual theology from a Nicaragüense perspective. Wow. So I looked at what factors impacted the construction and then the expression of theology from Nicaragüense Christian leaders.
Wow. That's awesome. And you're still in Los Angeles, right? That's where you live?
I live now in Costa Mesa, California. Yes.
Okay, not quite LA anymore.
Not quite LA anymore. I had to move. Traffic, that LA traffic was killing us.
Yeah. Well, it's wonderful to have you on. And you don't know this yet, but I want to do a series of interviews with thought leaders that are specialists in cultural identity. And I want to have you on for that later down the line because of your background and your learnings and even us being in the same program being formed through Cook School. It's a big deal. But today I just want to hear about your cultural identity, what's important to you. Talk a little bit about the overlap with Jesus, how Jesus informs our cultural identity and even church community, what it looks like to be yourself culturally in that community. So first off, what are the important parts of your cultural identity? Talk a little bit about those intersections and what that means to you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate this question very much because it helps us understand the nuances of Latin American identity, because the Latino community, as we know, is not a monolith, right? And it's a tapestry of various cultures It's a mosaic of expressions of across the board. It's spiritual expressions, it's traditions, language, geography, cuisine, all of that. So I'm glad that I get the chance to explain this and express this from my perspective, because then everybody else will have theirs, and then we can add to the melting pot of this Latin American identity. But for me, one of the biggest factors, I think, one of the biggest elements that truly is important to me, it's family, it's my faith expression, and believe it or not, as I think about this, it's humor. Okay. And I'll explain that a little bit. Family, because growing up in Nicaragua, because again, I spent a few years out there, I went to school there, we lived with my grandparents. My mom had 11 brothers and sisters, all right? And most of them lived with my grandparents. So when we moved out there, we lived with my grandparents, my aunts and uncles, and some of them had kids. So I also lived with my cousins. So it was this beautiful expression. So when I watched Encanto, that was it, okay? the correlation of that, it's, wow, like that was my household. Every morning, breakfast, everybody came in, had cafecito, pan. And it was a communal experience. For lunch, everybody was on their own. Everybody was working. But for dinner, without fail, everybody would meet at my grandma's house for dinner and for cafecito. So family dynamics and this idea of being there for each other, supporting each other through the good and the bad, the community aspect, the community being community oriented is really important to me. My faith, of course, my mom brought us up in a Pentecostal tradition.
Yeah.
And man, it has informed so much beyond my faith. Okay. Even the way that I speak and the way that I communicate.
Yeah. It, I know if people can't see you right now, one, you're wearing an awesome shout out Vanguard University bright blue, deep blue t-shirt. And Norlin is standing up preaching right now. This is awesome.
That's right.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Very good communicator. All right. Continue.
That's part of what has shaped and formed who I am. Not only because as someone who is deeply faith driven, and I've been involved in church quite a bit. I mean, every ministry you can think of, I've been a part of, as a preacher, as a teacher, as an evangelist, as someone who goes out and preaches, all of that. But as I think about what that meant for me and my even my own cultural identity, well, I learned it within a Nicaraguan context. Even when we moved back to the States, we were still with Latin American Pentecostal churches, independent Pentecostal churches. So that identity from Nicaragua translated over to this, the US context, and it kept being who I am. So to give you an example, when I would see who the leaders were within our community, I would try to mimic, right? And you try to, especially those eloquent speakers, you look at them and you admire them and you say, okay, I want to be that way. So I have to speak this way. I have to, my tone this way. My posture has to be that way. My expressions with my hands have to be a certain way. Well, all of that, again, it still informs who I am. So as I navigate the world now, I find myself drawing from that. The unfortunate part, the challenge here is when you navigate the world as who you are, and then it comes in conflict with the contextual culture, whether it's organizational, whether it's your neighborhood, whether it's a new church, right? Because again, this is we've been socialized to be this way, and I have been socialized to be that way. So when I enter a space and it doesn't necessarily align, then it creates a friction in certain experiences. So my faith is absolutely that. I have a picture of my mom that she doesn't know I took because she wouldn't let me take a picture of her every night without fail. She would be on her knees praying. And I once she visited me for our graduation, right? She was here and I was walking to the kitchen and I saw her praying. And that's when I took the picture. I'm like, I know if I ask, you will never do this. So let me take a picture real quick and then just, you know, jet. I have that picture as a reminder of the faith that she ingrained in us, that primero Dios, it's one of her sayings, God first. Si así Dios lo quiere, if God allows it and permits it. Wow. So my mom has been a huge, huge role model and a huge influence in my faith and how I believe it, how I express it, how I interact with it. And the last one that I mentioned was humor. And that's because honestly, in Nicaragua, you won't be considered family or a close friend unless somebody plays a joke on you. Okay. It doesn't matter if you understand it or not, if you speak Spanish or not. But I see this all the time with my own family members. That's the way that they connect. That's the way that they interact. There's an intimacy that's associated with humor, because as you know, some folks may not receive jokes well or humor well. But if you are comfortable enough to play a joke, to say a joke, and then to bring you into that, that means that you're family. There's proximity. So for me, there's a lot of humor behind the ways that I do things when I communicate personally or interpersonally, even in small gatherings or in bigger gatherings. There's always a sense of humor for me because that's who I am. So culturally speaking, Nicaraguans are very humorous. So those are major aspects, broad strokes of things that are really important to me.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. Honestly, friend, I'm pretty uneducated and uninformed when it comes to Central and South America. So when I think of the nuances between country to country, I want you to speak into that from your country's perspective. What I would say, here's a story to illustrate that. Majority culture people, and so in America, white people go through certain stages if they want to be cultured in the sense of like understanding intercultural, cross-cultural things. And I was in a stage like 23 years old thinking I was really cultured. And I meet this woman who's my wife now. We're in a white church in a suburb of LA. And she says, "Hi, my name is Diane." She introduces herself and she's presenting. She's ethnically Indian. And then she says she's from Guyana. So the first thing I think, because I think I'm cultured, I've traveled to Africa, I think she says Ghana. I'm like, "Oh yeah, Africa." She's like, "No, Guyana." And I was like, I don't even know where that is in the world, number one. So what do I know? And then she's like, "Yeah, it's Central South America." She's talking about, I'm like, "Wait, she's ethnically Indian." And she's like, "Yeah, I grew up in Jamaica." And I'm like, "But she's not dark skin, like black, right? In yes. Jamaican." So I'm confused. And I just bring that story up to say my starting point, like travel doesn't help. Education actually helps a little bit, but that doesn't make me cultured or enlightened. I want to come to you as someone not only just representing your people, but your perspective as a Nicaraguan and, yeah. and that country in particular. What are the distinctives in relation to the countries around it and in the Latin American experience? Because I know like very little, you're one of my only friends with that social location. So help us out a little bit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think there are many factors or many elements that I can highlight that shed light on the distinctives in Central America and Latin America across the board. And one of the major things for sure is just the political system. Politically speaking, right, the country has been undergoing severe needs in the especially starting April 2018 when there was a student-led protest across the country. And that led to a backlash from the governments. I mean, deaths, torture, kidnapping, you name it, it happened. And then, and ever since then, the government has doubled down as a dictatorship, and so much has happened. And that's one of those distinctives, because in other countries, especially the neighboring country, Costa Rica, it's much more democratic. And economically, it's much more advanced. And the fact that I say Costa Rica and immediately people think, "Oh, I know where that's at. I know where that's at." Or yes. Vacation, right? It's a vacation spot. So the fact that that's a reality, and Nicaragua is probably twice as big as Costa Rica physically, tells you where Nicaragua is within the Central American political system, economic system, and whatnot.
Yeah.
But even just internally, I really like discussing this, because internally we need to recognize this. And it's one of the things that I highlight about the fact that we're not a monolith and the fact that there's so much diversity within Latin America. I mean, and I always use Nicaragua as an example, because if you look at my mom, she's light skinned, green eyes. If you look at my dad, you know, he's a much darker and then, you know, brown eyes, or probably dark brown. So therefore I came out, you know, in somewhere in between. So that represents for me, the ethnic composition within Nicaragua, because on the west coast is the mestizo. It's more of the Spanish, especially phenotypically type. And on the east coast, the Caribbean coast,
yeah.
You have the Afro-Caribbean, influence with the Garifunas, and I mean from cuisine to traditions to language, you name it. And it's almost like two different worlds within the same country.
Wow.
Right. And the nuances of that need to be acknowledged and recognized, because as we think about Nicaraguan identity, we have to recognize again that it's also very, it's the whole spread. It's not just one, although we typically see, you know, the fairer skins being represented, but it's also Garifunas, it's also Afro-Caribbean, it's also, yeah, it's also the, you know, the language, the Miskitos and all of that. So when I think about my own ethnic identity, when I think about this and what it means to be Nicaraguense, I don't just think my mom's side of the family, which are all light skin, green eyes, right? I also think, well, there's also part of the heritage, indigenous, Afro-Caribbean, and the research says this as well about Latin American identity, how it's composed of three major buckets, right? Like the Spaniards with the colonization that happened, African with all the slaves that were brought into the country, and the indigenous communities. Wow. So when I think about my identity and I think about the nuances, I think about all of those ingredients in it. So that also creates experiences for people, because colorism is very much a thing across Latin America, but I can speak personally in Nicaragua.
So explain to people what colorism is if they don't know what that means.
Yeah, so colorism is you get there's a degree of discrimination and prejudice based on the shade of your skin color. So the lighter you are, the more privilege you have. The darker you are, the less privileged you are. And the experiences of that, again, they bleed into what kinds of jobs you can get, access to education, even relationships, right? I mean, yeah. For some, because it's so strong, someone who is lighter skinned, their families may have an issue with their daughter, their son dating someone who's darker. There is this expression that's very much present here in the U.S. about Latinos, but also across Latin America, which is mejorar la raza, which is to improve the race. And if you can guess what that means, it means lighten the race, lighten the generations. Wow. So go lighter rather than darker. So even just that ideological understanding, or that ideological position of mejorar la raza being intimately connected to race and pigmentation.
Wow.
Right. Again, it creates that experience. It creates the nuances, and it creates a whole bunch of inequity that exists in the country, especially as the government, as they try to expand economically. Well, they need land, and guess who gets thrown out of the land? Almost like they did here in the U.S. and everywhere else. Right. It's those that are marginalized, those that are at the poor, but also the indigenous communities.
Wow.
Right? Those that aren't represented in the government and to have someone who can advocate on their behalf.
Wow. I got to have you back for us to unpack some of these things more. There are different questions I have kind of spinning that I'd be excited to expose this audience to. For now, let's move on to Jesus. I want to hear like the intersection between following Jesus and your own cultural identity. And to start, I have to ask a question I've been asking most people that I've interviewed thus far. And that is, what was your imagination of Jesus growing up? What was his skin color? Was it a white Jesus? Was it a Jesus that looked like you and your people? What was the imagination that you had built of Christ? And then what is it now?
I think without a doubt, because of what I was exposed to, it was a white Jesus, right? Fair skin, blue eyes, blonde. Most of the artwork around Nicaragua that is spiritual in nature, this faith-based, whether it's at the cathedrals or whether it's outside expressions of them, portray him that way, right? A white, blue-eyed, blonde Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean, even I remember a kid's Bible with all the the illustrations, right?
Yeah.
I remember loving that Bible. It was like my comic book, right? And I would go to it, and I don't remember any brown faces. And in fact, this actually makes me think. Well, I have my daughter's Bible, my kid's Bible in the back of my car. Like, I'm gonna go check on that and make sure that there's some brown representation. Yeah. You know, that there's some appropriate. So. My I can say without a doubt it was a white Jesus, and it's because we've fallen prey to the impact of colonization across the board in art, in expression, in art, the way that we think, right? The epistemology, it's no longer that, thank the Lord, right? It's much more informed, much more accurate, and I would think so. And I think it's even beyond just the, what color was Jesus, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's just more, a more profound understanding of what his identity means.
Okay.
Rather than just arguing about whether he was darker or lighter, it's what does that mean? And what did it mean for him? And what does it mean for us? How does that translate? How do we extrapolate theological truths from that reality that Jesus left heaven, came incarnate, right? And came into a particular culture, was socialized, did not reject it, spoke the language, did the cultural traditions, recognized the patterns, followed those patterns. In some of the instances, he also rejected some, right? So the fact that I can think about Jesus' identity to a much more well-rounded way helps me make some connections about, well, if Jesus was that way, X, Y, Z, whatever it may be, right? We can get into that. Then Norlin can X, Y, Z.
Okay.
Then Josh can follow, because at the end of the day, we're Christians, we're Christ followers, we're disciples of him. And therefore we can learn from what he did and what he stood, but we can't really do that 100% unless we understand him. Right, the dynamics of how where he was born and the actions that he took, whether they perpetuated or whether they rejected cultural norms. I mean, I think that's a reality that we fail to see as Christians, and we fail to disciple others to see.
Thanks so much for sharing that. Hope you'll join us next week for part two of this interview. Thank you so much for listening. If you want more content, you can go to jwbuck.org or follow me on Instagram, handles jwbuck. If you have any questions about culture, cultural identity, or faith, feel free to send me a message. Hope you'll join us next week.